a former pro, an SEC analyst, and a damn good dog. Matt Stinchcomb is only on the College Football Voice of the South. Presented by Georgia's Own Credit Union, Cigna Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and ASW Distillery.
He's the College Football Hall of Famer, and he joins us each and every week on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker Line. He is Matt Stinchcomb. Stinch, I remember when you signed at Georgia, nobody was sure where you were going to go. You went up to the table, and you pulled out that bulldog puppy, and everybody erupted in applause as it was Georgia. Oh, I'm sorry, that was Isaiah Crowell. What was signing day like for you?
Yeah, I was about to say you got it confused, because mine, I jumped out of an airplane, and then the parachute, mm-hmm. when it came open, it was a dummy chute, so it was for another school, and then we cut the cord, and then another chute came out, and obviously it had the Power G on it.
Correct.
We thought it was subtle, but most people picked up on the fact that we were going to commit to Georgia. So, signing day for me was a high school cafeteria with a to-go box of chicken wings and a letter of intent. That was the extent of it. There wasn't there were no fireworks. There may have been a poster, and I'm pretty sure some family members were in attendance.
Can I ask, was any of the other student body or teammates there? I'm not kidding. Deion Glover, I saw the same thing. I went to his high school, and some of the student body was there. It was a big day for the student body. I'm seriously asking, was there anybody else sort of around you when that happened?
Yeah, there were other guys that were signing to go to other schools. By that point in time, Parkview High School, where I went, we were playing good football. So those guys, we had a guy signed to go play for Samford. University. We had a couple of guys go to a couple other small schools. So it wasn't just, it wasn't just my signing day, but it was mostly teammates and family members and the high school cafeteria. I mean, obviously it's expanded a lot these days, especially with the commitment ceremonies, which, in and of themselves, outside of signing day, when you see these commitment announcements, I'm surprised how much attention we still pay to them, because that commitment is kind of redefining the meaning of the word commitment, because oftentimes those things just don't stick.
Well, that goes for the coaches. My commitment is to give you a great 4 years here. Wait, I got to go. And then the suits who fire people.
I got to tell you, though. I mean, if you're a kid that's going to a school for a coach, you're on a fool's errand, because the turnover there, I think y'all just said 37% of collegiate athletes, I don't know if that was specific to football, are transferring. The other side of that would be is that if they're entering the transfer portal or they're transferring from their current school, are they finding a spot at another school? Because I know in football that's not the case. Guys are entering the transfer portal and then they've got nowhere to go. It's not like teams are holding back scholarships just in case someone may want to transfer to their program at some point in time. But the coaches, if you're a high school kid and you're going to play for a coach, you're going to be disappointed. That's just the long and short of it. You better want to go to that school. You better like where that school's located. You better like the program or have some other reason to want to be there, because the turnover in the coaching ranks, especially this is below the coaches, the head coach position, coordinators and position coaches, is something like 80%. So you're going to be disappointed.
Matt, that 37.2% was general population. The point was sort of, as kids are getting arrested, oh, the athlete makes the headline. But there were other kids getting arrested on campuses. There were other people transferring besides athletes. So the general population goes at more than a one-third clip in a five-year period transferring schools. So these things are not just athletes doing them. I do want to ask you this about signing day. I keep hearing, well, coaches don't like it, and it's during finals, and then we got a dead period. And if you were given an opportunity as the student athlete to sign on August 10th, to sign on January 14th, to sign on May 8th. Why isn't that a real thing? I know you don't get the TV show and you don't get maybe all of these power ranking companies that maybe it's not a business, but don't you think what would be in the best interest is somebody being able to say, I'm so glad that's done now. Let me get on with the rest of my high school life.
Yes. I mean, I would have signed early, happily. And I think the risk that you run or you see there is that you get guys that maybe, if they sign, they've committed, they've signed their application for financial aid. If you sign a letter of intent, which isn't even a requirement as I understand it, Roquan Smith, I think, was the first one to kind of bring that to the forefront. But once you've done those things, then you're done. But I also as I understand it, would obligate the institution then, and in the event that something occurs after that point in time, and let's say it's not something untoward, let's say it's a pretty significant injury, or it's just a really poor senior season, maybe you tap out, maybe you think, hey, I'm done, and now I'm just not going to give great effort. Well, the college might not like that very much, but here you are, you're all committed. So I do think that it does have some detraction, but for the athlete, I think that there are athletes out there that aren't in it just for the pomp and circumstance of an announcement ceremony or signing day. And, hey, that's great. I mean, if that's your thing, go crazy. There are guys out there that would want to end it and get off of the carousel. Why not jump on a commitment, sign the scholarship, commit to a school, sign the scholarship-related papers, and get it over with? As a player, I would have loved to have done that.
Matt Stinchcomb, College Football Hall of Famer, with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker Line. I'm certain we've talked about it before, but now with both of Georgia's tackles announcing they're going pro and not playing in the bowl game, what are your thoughts on players not participating in these bowl contests?
I'd rather they play. I mean, Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson for Auburn are both top-tier picks. Derrick Brown's a team-changing type of a talent, I think. In different ways, right? You know, Quinnen Williams was a different type of player. Ed Oliver was a different type of player. Derrick Brown is distinct from those two guys, and I still think is an elite defensive tackle. He's going to play in the Outback Bowl. It's the Outback Bowl, for crying out loud. I mean, if we're going to talk about exhibition games, this isn't among the college football playoff rotational games. This isn't one of the playoff six. And yet, he's going to play. Marlon Davidson, he's going to play. Marlon Davidson, we'd be talking about him if he weren't on the same team as Derrick Brown. I'd rather players play. Jerry Jeudy, he's going to play for Alabama, one of the top wide receivers coming out. I think that the reasoning that has been so, I think, widely accepted is the idea of you're avoiding injury and you're trying to protect your top-end earning capacity in the draft. I get that, but if that's the case, the guys that are really at risk are not the elite players that are going to get drafted anyway because they're willing to let you rehab an injury. It's the guys that might go in the middle rounds that if they get injured, nobody's going to take them. Their career might end then. They might have to wait till next year and sign as a free agent. You know, if we're going to accept that the top guys are going to sit out, really the ones I think that are most at risk are the ones that are the middle round guys. They can't afford to get injured. They can't afford to blow an ACL. And so if that starts happening, who's going to play in these bowl games? Exactly. You know, the mentality, I think, falls apart. The logic behind it falls apart pretty quickly for me. And you see plenty of exceptions where guys are willing to keep playing ball and in what would be considered, I think, lesser, quote-unquote, exhibition games.
Matt, we kind of all agree that head coaches and certainly assistants and coordinators and even line guys and everybody else, they want their finger on everything. They want to be in the middle of all this stuff when it comes to their teams. Can I offer something if I was a head coach that I would do and whether I called you to come to the University of Georgia? I have 23 recruits. Before they do anything, I'm going to bring someone like you in. I'm going to leave the room. No coaches in the room. I'm going to have you explain to them what's about to happen to them and for them. But it's not with a coach's slant. It's not all pie in the sky. I'm going to have the reality of, hey, gentlemen, congratulations. But let me tell you what you need to be thinking about to make this really work for you. I don't know anybody who does that, but I swear I would find somebody for every school that I was at to come in and give that type of talk every year to those people.
Yeah, and I'm sure there are schools out there that do it, but I'll tell you, Chris, if they had done that when I was at Georgia, I'm probably not listening that closely. I had all the answers. I mean, I was 10 feet tall and bulletproof, and I had a 30-pound brain, and I think it would be you'd be hard-pressed to get their attention. And I've said this. I think a lot of guys that played and went through that transition and experienced the change that happens in the game, and it's subtle, is that you go from playing the game and you're playing it because it's a game. And even at the collegiate level, as big of a business as it has become around the game, at least at the collegiate level, in the pros, it becomes a job. But it becomes a job in ways that you didn't experience before as a collegiate player and that you didn't perceive before. Well, it's very much a job immediately. And the league knows that. The management knows that. The coaches know that. And the vets know that. The guys that don't know it are the new guys. They don't get it yet. They know you're getting paid now, but they don't understand how it really works, that it is ruthless, that you are on a team, but they are always, every day. Art Shell told us this. He told me and Chris Terry when we were coming out of Georgia, it was the best, most poignant thing I heard in the entire process. We're sitting in the back of his Suburban going to Blue Ridge Grill. Isn't that the one across from OK Cafe?
It is. That's correct, yes.
Yeah, Blue Ridge Grill. And Dan Reed, they weren't going to draft either one of us, so I don't know why we were there. But to get to ride in a Suburban with Art Shell, you jump on that opportunity.
Yeah, but what does he know, Matt?
Yeah, exactly. He's just a Hall of Famer, won Super Bowls, and was a head coach. Mm-hmm. But he said to Chris and I both, he was like, I'm going to tell y'all something I used to tell my teams when I was in Oakland. He was the O-line coach for Atlanta at the time, obviously. He said, I want you all to understand something. Every day that you come out here, I'm looking to replace you. That's not college. That's not high school. That is a job. That's a ruthless workplace that's looking to get better every single day. And guys don't get that. They think that they get it. They don't. You think that you compete in college? Go into a mini camp where they're not even in pads. And cutthroat and vicious as any spring practice, summer camp practice. I don't care if you're at Alabama or anywhere else. Because those guys, they're trying to get a job, not a scholarship spot, not a letter, not a a letter jacket or something. They're looking to get a job, and that's the biggest transition.
It's funny you say that, too. Chris Herron, the drug addict, obviously from Boston College, much more serious situation, but he said it. We had people come in and talk to us, and I said, I'm not that guy. And Herm Edwards said it as well when he spoke to the rookies. When you're that age, you're right. You think you have all the answers. You're not going to listen.
Matt, they did another study right around 2010. They asked incoming freshmen football players and basketball players in college, how many of you will get paid to do this? 80%.
Yeah.
That 80% said, oh, yeah, I'm going to.
But, guys, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No.
I really don't. I think you have to be confident. You have to be confident in your abilities. I think that's better than the other side of it, which is, man, I don't even think I belong here. Because now you don't have a chance. You don't even have a chance at the level that you're currently at. But I will say that it has to be tempered, because when that does become more real or even a possibility, then you need to understand what it is exactly that you're about to go through. And the truth is, I don't know. If you can't listen to Herm Edwards, who did it as a player and a coach, and now he's done it, as a collegiate coach now at Arizona State, if you can't listen to some of the guys that have gone before you, and I, maybe I'll just speak for me, I wasn't listening. I wouldn't have listened. I know that about me. That you have to experience it. And I feel badly for the guys that are banking. Now, if the 80% are saying, yeah, I'm going to make it to the league, and they're banking on that, they're crazy. Because as we know, the statistics are the inverse of that, and even to a greater extreme. You're not going to make it is the likelihood.
All right, Matt. Well, listen, we appreciate it. You have bowl games coming up?
Got a couple of bowl games, guys. The Camellia Bowl this Saturday.
Where's that at?
I don't even know. I don't think the camellias are even blooming this time of year.
No.
And then,
I didn't know they had that much money to sponsor a bowl.
Yeah, it's funny, but they got together, all the camellias, they pulled it past the hat, and now they have a bowl game. And then we'll do the Texas Bowl with A&M taking on Oklahoma State, an old school Big 12 rivalry. And I think I'm doing something at the Belt Bowl, but I'm not real sure yet.
Well, they got you working. You got to earn your salary somehow, some way, even though you're a Hall of Famer.
Less of a burden on us taxpayers.
They're always looking to replace you there, Matt, as well.
It's the truth.
All right, listen, if we don't talk to you, have a Merry Christmas. Good luck with all of the bowl action that you're going to be calling, and we'll talk to you into the new year.
All right, guys. See you.
Matt Stinchcomb, College Football Hall of Famer, with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker Line.